This is the 1A Record Club.
The 1A Record Club. This is 1A.
1A.
1A Record Club.
Hey! Let's go!
Welcome to the 1A Record Club.
This is 1A. I'm Jen White. 20 years ago, in 2002, Avril Lavigne released her debut album, Let Go. It was a smash hit, more than 16 million copies sold worldwide, and her songs were everywhere. Remember this one, too? Avril Lavigne sounded and looked different than other pop stars at the time, with her smudged eyeliner, Converse sneakers, and tattoos, and that came with backlash. Critics of Avril's pop-punk vibe called her a poser, even though she wrote much of her music. Now, 20 years later, Avril Lavigne is back. That was the single Love It When You Hate Me from Avril Lavigne's new album Love Sucks, which comes out Friday. It's part of a larger comeback of the pop-punk music that rocked the 2000s, a revival that looks and sounds different than its early days. We'll get into all of it, but first, let's introduce the guests for today's edition of the 1A Record Club. It's the 1A series when we talk to you about the newest music and why it matters. With us from Brooklyn, New York, is Erica Campbell. She's the U.S. News Editor of music publication NME. Erica, welcome to 1A.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Also with us from New York City is Tim Marson, culture reporter for Mashable. Hi, Tim.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So a couple of the songs from Avril Lavigne's new album, again, it comes out on Friday, have already been released, and this is a song called Bite Me. Okay, Erica, what do you think of Avril Lavigne's new music so far?
I have been listening to it all morning, and I really, really enjoy it. I mean, it sounds like the Avril we know and love, but it's definitely that evolution that you mentioned where it sounds a little different than it did when this music was first coming out. So yeah, I'm a big fan so far.
Tim, what about you?
You know, at first, I don't know if I was as big of a fan, but then I was listening to Love It When You Hate Me last night and then again this morning, and I found myself singing along. So I think I'm coming around to it. You know, I think, like, you know, it's becoming one of those songs that, you know, gets stuck in your head.
Erica, how was Avril treated as an artist when her music first came out in the early 2000s?
Yeah, so back when she first came out in the early 2000s, there were a lot of questions around her authenticity, not only because people assumed she was a poser, but also because a lot of people questioned whether or not she wrote her songs. So she wasn't as accepted as she has been retroactively as these newer artists start to give her credit for, you know, inspiring them and inspiring their music. At the time, she was in this weird middle ground that seemed a little reactive to the current pop landscape, but people weren't as accepting of her sound and her music as they seem to be now.
And what was the poser bit about? Where did that come from?
I think it could have come from a lot of things. I feel like as one of the first female artists to kind of break into that scene and be, you know, at the top of the charts, there was a lot of people looking at her. You know, she stood out as not being you know, like the Blink-182s or the Sum 41s, and being a guy in short shorts that was, you know, talking about a girl over guitar. And I think there's a lot of that when women come out and they have that same vibe and that same energy of people reacting to it and saying that they're mimicking something as opposed to authentically creating it and basing it off their experience.
So Avril Lavigne's new album is coming 20 years after her first album, and she's done some music in between there. But at a time, it's coming out at a time when this pop-punk sound is back in style. So I want to hear each of you define pop-punk music and what you think makes the genre distinct. Tim?
Sure. You know, I've always kind of said it's somewhat in the eye of the beholder. But I think it's kind of what it sounds like to me. You know, it's punk music that's a little more poppy. I think there's, you kind of have a more, a reliance on a hook, you know, on a good chorus. And it's not quite pop music, though, because it's still kind of loud. It's still angry, and actually probably more angsty than angry. So, yeah, it's kind of in the eye of the beholder, but I think the name does a good job of describing it.
What about for you, Erica?
Yeah, I agree with Tim's definition. I think it's very much that brashness that we're used to from earlier punk music, but it's delivered in a way that's really melodic and really kind of lends itself to pop and catchy lyricism that kind of gets stuck in your head and it's contagious. So it does a good job of kind of existing in between those two genres. And I think that's what people love about it.
Well, Taylor tweeted, "All-time low, Forever the Sickest Kids, and Paramore were my favorite middle school bands that introduced me to the pop-punk genre, and I've never looked back. I'm 25, but still listen to iconic anthems like Dear Maria, Count Me In, and Buy All-Time Low regularly." And we'll get into some new artists that are part of pop-punk's comeback shortly. But Tim, how do you think Avril's new record fits into the revival of that sound?
Well, I think whenever there's a revival of the sound, there's a natural inclination to return to the people who had a hand in starting it. And I think, you know, at least from the first two tracks from the new album, I feel like Avril's doing a nice job of sort of, they felt a little bit more of 2022 than of her earlier work, and I thought they had nice, like, kind of catchy pop elements to them, maybe more so than her previous work. But, you know, Erica might be able to speak to that a little bit better, being a music journalist. Yeah.
Erica, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree with that as well. I will say, like, talking about bridging that gap that you mentioned, the fact that Mark Hoppus features on the album from Blink-182, but there's also features from Machine Gun Kelly and Black Bear, it really does create this, like, almost community of pop punk, like what it was and what it is now. I think that the sound does a good job of that as well. Like, having Machine Gun Kelly on the album, and he has more of this, like, almost like hip-hop rap ethos in the way that he delivers his lyrics, really shows you that genres are changing and that pop punk is changing and moving into this direction of almost like a no man's genre land where you can really experiment with the sound.
Well, Abby in Los Angeles wanted to share a memory from pop punk's early days.
So when I was in high school in the early 2000s in rural Maine, where I'm from, I stumbled on a CD at my local record store. Through Being Cool by a band called Save the Day. I bought it based on their cover alone. They were just five guys looking awkward in the middle of a party. And I loved the title, Through Being Cool. The singer didn't have really what was considered a traditionally good voice. The words didn't really rhyme necessarily, but it was still catchy. At the end of the title track, he sings, "Your world is what you made it, and I don't want a part of it." Just like someone giving me express permission to just say, screw it. I am who I am, and screw everyone else who can't respect that.
Thanks for that message, Abby. And I just want to mention, we'll be sharing a playlist of all the songs that come up today on our website, the1a.org. A pop punk became very popular around the late 90s, early 2000s. I want you to take us back to that time, Erica. How ubiquitous was this music?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I'm looking back on it, I was just growing up in a small town, so I never really knew what other people were out there listening to it. Like growing up in my town, there was a lot of people that listened to country and a lot of people that listened to rap, but it felt so resonant for people like me who kind of felt like an outsider. So at the time, there was a lot of like people that you could talk to on the internet or other people that you knew kind of resonated with your experience because they were listening to the same angsty music.
Tim, who else besides Avril Lavigne was making pop punk music in the 2000s? Because I have a feeling their names are going to come up quite a bit today.
Sure. I mean, the top of mind one, I think the one you have to mention is Blink-182. They were pretty ubiquitous. I think for a lot of people, if you think of pop punk, they're one of the first bands you would think of. You know, there's bands like Sum 41. You could probably argue that the pop punk as a genre kind of started with Green Day. But I guess Blink-182 is top of mind for me when you think of pop punk.
And who was listening to pop punk music in the 2000s?
You know, that's interesting. I mean, in the 2000s, I was probably the the ripe age for this type of music. I think I was, middle school, high school. And I think kind of, as Erica mentioned, it felt like an outsider-y type of music. Or if you're feeling angsty or, some of those teenage emotions, I think the music really spoke to young people who might have felt like they didn't know exactly where they fit in the landscape.
Well, you got this tweet from Laurent who says, how is pop punk different than emo? Erica, I'm going to let you feel that one.
That is a great question. I feel like pop punk really harkens back to those early bands still, kind of like the Sound of the Clash and the Ramones, where it really does depend on this powerful guitar playing more than just emo. And I think that emo has this almost deeper level of sadness that's being portrayed, whereby pop punk is almost like this frustration and this disappointment. It's coming from more of an empowered place than I think that emo is.
We're talking about the revival of pop punk music with Erica Campbell, the U.S. News editor for NME, and Tim Marson, culture reporter for Mashable. And with you, Desiree tweeted us a throwback recommendation. I had Simple Plan's I'd Do Anything on repeat in fifth grade. This song was released in 2002. I'm Jen White, back with more in a moment. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR. I'd do anything just to fall asleep with you. Will you remember me? 'Cause I know I won't forget you. Together we broke all the rules, dreaming and dropping out of school, and leave this place but never come back. So now, maybe after all these years, if you miss me, I'm Jen White. This is 1A. All right, grab your band tee and eyeliner because we're talking about the recent revival of pop punk music. And if you're looking for evidence, look no further than Top 40 Radio. Last year, Olivia Rodrigo released the song Good For You. It reached number one in 23 different countries, and its sound was a throwback to the pop punk of the 2000s. In fact, fans quickly pointed out how similar it was to the genre's classic Misery Business by Paramore from 2007. Paramore's Hayley Williams and Josh Farro were given retroactive co-writing credits for inspiring Rodrigo's hit song, Good For You. But pop-punk music isn't just inspiring her. The angsty lyrics and catchy melodies of the genre are back in full force. Later in the hour, debut artist Jaden will join us. But first, a bit more from our guests, U.S. News editor Erica Campbell and culture reporter for Mashable, Tim Marson. We also want to hear from you. Sean tweeted, Bite Me by Avril Lavigne kind of sounds like Paramore. She's not my favorite, but she's definitely talented. Give me some Face-to-Face, Bouncing Souls, Saves the Day, or Jimmy Eat World. Elon tweeted, as a longtime fan of pop punk emo alternative, I love to see artists like Willow emerging in the genre. We always need more Black representation. And Amina emailed, I hope you do not forget to mention Pink. Well, what memories does pop punk bring back for you? What new artists do you love? Tweet us at 1A or send us an email at 1A@WAMU.org. Tim, what role has Olivia Rodrigo played in bringing back pop punk music?
I think she's played a very large role. And I think being as popular as she is and kind of using the sound in at least a few of her songs, including the song Brutal, which I thought was definitely and heavily influenced by pop punk. I think if you're that popular and you're bringing back both the style fashion-wise and the sound music-wise, that's going to go a long way to bringing pop punk to a more kind of mainstream young audience.
What about for you, Erica?
Yeah, I think that Olivia Rodrigo is such an example of what pop punk means to artists that are coming up right now. I think they grew up, you know, hearing the Avril Lavigne's and even bands like No Doubt that were, you know, kind of making that sound and making that punk sound feel more approachable. And yeah, like Tim mentioned, Olivia Rodrigo is a huge artist. So for her to lean into the genre and to play this guitar music and to have these lyrics that, you know, still have that existential dread that are a part of them and that frustration, I think it says a lot about where the genre is headed and how important and popular it is to fans.
Well, in January, the entertainment company Live Nation announced a new music festival in Las Vegas called When We Were Young. Its headliners include many of the artists we've talked about today, including Avril Lavigne and Paramore. The festival sold out, so its organizers added a second day, then a third, and this comes only 4 years after the long-running Warped Tour, which featured many of the same artists, came to an end. Tim, how much of pop punk's comeback is about nostalgia?
Oh, I think quite a bit. I mean, and timing is everything, right? You know, the culture seems to move in cycles, and right now, pop punk is in that cycle. And if you look, it's not only nostalgia for people my age who grew up with this sort of music, it's nostalgia for people who didn't have it. There's kids online who are, you know, posting nostalgic videos of high school in the 2000s because they think, you know, this seemed like a great time. So I think nostalgia plays a huge, huge role in this.
Well, Michael tweeted, pop punk is the new classic dad rock as millennials are now that age. In true dad fashion, I love the genre as a whole and its resurgence, but prefer the classics generally. But there are some cool newer releases. Erica, you know, angsty lyrics define pop punk, as you said earlier, and angst is a feeling strongly associated with being a teenager. But we're seeing sort of this cross-section of people accessing this music. So who do you think pop punk is for today?
Oh, I think pop punk is for everyone. I think Tim made such a great point about how younger generation is looking at this time that we all lived through and probably didn't love that much as this, you know, era when things were simple and easy. But I also think for a lot of us who just lived through, you know, the past 2 years, we've kind of had this desire to go back to that time where things felt simple and easy. I really do think it's become so popular because it resonates with everyone and how everyone's feeling right now. And that's why everyone, you know, is so quick to go see a pop punk show or listen to a pop punk band.
Okay, we got this tweet from Chris, and Erica, I think this was a response to something you said. Chris says, pop punk started with Green Day. Tell that to the Descendants. Clean Sheets is a timeless pop punk class. And a couple more of you wanted to bring up the Descendants. Steven tweeted, Descendants are the godfathers of pop punk. Sean tweeted, I feel like the Descendants were the original pop punk band. Milo Goes to College is a masterpiece. Erica, what do you think?
I think that there are so many different ways that you could go back and look at who the initiators of this sound were. We're talking about rock music in general and how it evolves and how it changes. I will say that Green Day did kind of have a lot of that zany lyricism, and we think of them because they were so prevalent when they came out. But yeah, I think that there's a lot of different ways to look at how pop punk came about and who's responsible for it. There are more than one band, obviously, or even two that are responsible for the movement that we have right now.
Well, we'll make sure to include some Descendants tracks on that playlist we're putting together, and you'll find it at the1a.org. Now, the musician Machine Gun Kelly, known as MGK, started his career as a rapper but transitioned to pop punk with his 2020 album, Tickets to My Downfall. It was his first number one album and first platinum album, and MGK has a new song out this month with Willow called Emo Girl. We'll come back to Willow in a few moments. But first, Tim, talk about Machine Gun Kelly and the role he's played in pop punk's comeback.
I think he's played a large role, mostly because it was sort of a surprise for some people when somebody reinvents themselves in that way, that it's going to draw more attention. And he's been featured on a lot of tracks with other artists as well, you know, as a part of this resurgence.
Erica, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Machine Gun Kelly he's such a great example just because of the fact that pop punk seems to be moving into this area where they can really dip their toes into lots of different genres. And he didn't necessarily get his start with music that leaned more into rock. But I think that that's kind of an interesting pathway into pop punk, is being able to embrace lots of different sounds and lots of different genres. And I think that resonates with a lot of fans.
Now, pop punk music was born out of the punk music of the 70s. Erica, give us a short history of where the sound came from.
Yeah, definitely. Like a lot of people have mentioned on Twitter, that sound really came from those bands like the Ramones and the Sex Pistols and the Clash originally. But when you get closer to the 2000s or you get closer to the 90s, you have newer bands that are kind of still taking that way of playing guitar and that sound that feels very brash, but they're mixing it with melodies that are still very pop, you know, like Green Day that was mentioned, and also Blink-182 that's still really prevalent now. And then in the early 2000s, you've got bands like that I was in love with, like Fall Out Boy and Sum 41. And eventually we were lucky enough to have people like Avril Lavigne that we've been talking about, and also Paramore and Hayley Williams, that really had this amazing vocal range that really brought a new sound to it, but also brought diversity because it wasn't just men making this music at that point.
Well, Michael tweets, the pop punk revival makes sense because the people who were kids in 2002 are now adults with money that can pay for that nostalgia. I'm curious about your personal connection, Tim, to pop punk, and whether this is, you, when you think about the soundtrack of your life and your teens specifically, whether pop punk plays a role.
Oh, it certainly does. I think I was the right age. Simply put, you know, like Erica said, I Blink-182 was like the music that you listened to that your parents probably wouldn't like, but you somehow got a hold of when I was younger. And then, you know, you come into bands like Fall Out Boy. And then even now, it's kind of followed me to where I really love more modern bands, like a band called Pup from Canada that is definitely pop punk. You know, I think it really, I think if you ever felt kind of angsty and then you kind of felt mad at yourself for feeling angsty because you're like, well, what right do I have to be this angsty? So you kind of make fun of yourself. That's kind of the feeling of pop punk to me, where you're both angry and like rolling your eyes at the fact that you're angry.
Well, it gets me to this email from Molly, who says, pop punk is an oxymoron. This is pop music for people who wish they were subversive or rebellious. Erica, is this a pretty common sentiment for people who may not be big fans of pop punk?
You know, I love that sentiment as a fan of pop punk. I do feel like there's something to be said about what Tim just mentioned about the rolling your eyes kind of at your own situation. There's so many of these songs that are focused on love, and they're focused on like the problems aren't really getting that heavy and that deep. And I think that's what makes it so cathartic to sing about these problems. But there is this sort of self-deprecation involved where you're aware of the fact that you're making a big deal about something that may not be a big deal. And I think that's what's great about this genre specifically.
We're talking to Erica Campbell, U.S. News Editor for NME, and Tim Marson, Culture Reporter for Mashable. We're also talking to you. Alex tweeted, born in 1992. I was somehow comically out of touch with most of the incredible pop punk explosion of the late 90s and early 2000s, except for Weezer. Things weren't simple or easy even back then, but the visceral, loud, punchy music helped us through it then as it helps now. I'm Jen White. You're listening to 1A. A quick reminder that if you're loving the music you're hearing, look no further than our Twitter page at 1A or our website, the1a.org. That's where you can find a playlist of today's music. And if there's some artists you've been keeping an eye on, tweet them to us so we can include them in the show. Now, Erica, the last song we heard, Emo Girl, features Willow. She's a young black queer woman in today's pop punk scene. And during the genre's genesis, that would have made her an outlier, but not today. Talk about the diversity of pop punk's comeback and how that compares to what we saw earlier.
Yeah, there's been a lot of new artists that have gotten attention and have made, you know, new fans and have made a huge impact on pop punk that do not look like the artists that we grew up with, which has been, I think, fantastic for the genre to have all these different perspectives. And I will say that some of that has just come naturally. Like, these artists grew up being able to see that women could front bands, or they are able to see lesser-known artists like Fifi Dobson, who was making music similar to Avril Lavigne, but she was a black woman in Canada who didn't get as much credit or popularity as Avril at the time. But I will also say that recent, you know, events like the Black Lives Matter movement and people kind of looking back and making sure that they give platforms to more diverse artists has also kind of given this rise to this focus of like, these artists were already here. Are we shining a light on them? Are we making space for more diverse artists and artists of color who were already resonating with and making this pop punk music? So it's been great to kind of see them come to the forefront and take up that space.
Well, Bree tweets, thank you for saying pop punk is for everyone. Bands like Meet Me at the Altar and Cliff Diver featuring women of color are changing the game. I even think with the reprisal, we're seeing how diverse the genre has always been. Well, let's give a shout out to another up and coming Black musician in the pop punk scene, Kenny Hoopla. This is his song Estella, which Blink-182's Travis Barker played drums on and produced. Erica, how much are we seeing this, I hesitate to call it cross-generational, but this sort of blending of aughts pop-punk artists and newer artists?
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot of it, and I think Travis Barker has been, like, at the forefront of this, like, from not only featuring on songs and kind of taking on this role of mentor, but creating his own label to bring up artists. And I think that's been so nice because when it comes to these opportunities to get into, you know, get in front of fans or to kind of introduce new artists to, you know, fan bases you've always had, like Travis Barker has this great legendary, you know, career with Blink-182, it gives them the opportunity to reach people that they wouldn't have necessarily reached. And I think when you have these like pop punk purist and they say they see that like Travis Barker is co-signing an artist, they're more likely to like listen to that artist and give them a chance, which has been great.
Well, something notable about pop punk's comeback is how much it's melding with other genres. Singer-songwriter Ed Sheeran joined forces with the band Bring Me the Horizon to release a new version of his hit song Bad Habits, and this came out last week. Tim, do you think this merging of genres is something we're seeing specifically in pop punk or really more broadly in the music industry?
I think it's probably more broadly. I think there's less defined genres. I think, you know, there's like Erica's mentioned where MGK kind of bridged that gap between rap and pop punk. And now you can get kind of Ed Sheeran, which is far more pop, and add more of the pop to the pop punk formula. I think there's probably a broader trend where you're not so closely boxed in.
And what about for you, Erica?
Yeah, I think it's great that people are able to bridge the gap. I will say that because it's become so popular recently, that I do think that pop artists are probably more keen to be involved with sounds that are more punk because it's going to make them relevant. It's going to make them, you know, resonate with fans that are listening to pop punk right now. It's a big comeback, so I think a lot of people might be interested in jumping on that bandwagon.
We're discussing pop punk's comeback as the latest edition of 1A's Record Club. With us, Erica Campbell, U.S. News Editor for NME, and Tim Marson, Culture Reporter for Mashable. A new artist making waves in the genre, Jaden, joins us next, but we couldn't talk about today's pop punk without nodding to the bands who came first.
This is Mike from Montebello, Alabama, and I think one of the best punk songs is Waiting Room by Fugazi. Anything by Fugazi, but definitely Waiting Room.
Mike, thanks for your help. I'm Jen White. More from you and our guests in a moment. Now let's get back to our conversation about the resurgence of pop punk music, and who better to explain things than Jaden Hostler. He makes music as Jaden, that's spelled J-X-D-N, and his songs have been streamed more than 700 million times. Here's Jaden's song, Wannabe, featuring Machine Gun Kelly. I wanna be Poison tweeted, honestly, Jaden brought a new wave of people from Gen Z to love this pop punk space. We look at this as, yes, a revival, but also an awakening for sure. His range and voice and his covers of Driver's License showed how much you can do with this genre. Jaden's rise is a modern story of TikTok star turned rock star. Last year, after his music went viral, Blink-182's Travis Barker took notice and gave him a record deal. Jaden begins his headline solo world tour this April. Jaden, welcome to 1A.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So you joined TikTok in 2019, released your first song in 2020. So a lot has happened very quickly for you. What has it been like to attract so much interest to your music?
It's so hard to actually put into words, you know, because it's really a lot of feelings that I've been through, a lot of ups and downs for a lot of different moments. The moment that Travis called my management team, that was just such a an eye-opener that it was real. You know, I was really chasing after my dream, but I had told myself, you know, if this doesn't work, I'm not really going to do it. And I know that may sound weird to some people, but I was just so set that I was born to do this. And Travis's call and sign really confirmed that. So I was just so excited to be in the scene. I was ready to learn as much as I can.
Who are some of your favorite pop punk artists, whether they're making music now or you listen to them? Well, you probably weren't born in the 2000s. I don't know when you were born. Sorry
about
that.
No, you're fine. I was born in 2001. So, yeah, you're right about that. I was really, really young. But it's funny. A lot of the people you were talking about recently are one, my really good friends. One is a label mate of mine, and then the other one I went on tour with. So Kenny Hoopla is actually a really big inspiration and was this whole past year. I actually got to go on tour with MGK, and Kenny ended up playing before me in the set. So it was really, really cool to finally have that full circle moment. But bands like Silverstein and Finch, actually, and The Used were really imperative to kind of like my learning process and the whole punk scene.
What drew you to the sound?
Oh, it's so funny. I was listening. I don't know if it's Tim. I don't want to say his name wrong, but he was talking about the angst in the music. My whole life, I had just been in this confined, almost like compartment. You know, I grew up in a very religious home and school, and I just, everything inside of me wanted to kind of like rebel, you know, and I didn't never had a place. I wasn't anywhere and I wasn't anyone. And finally, when I found, it was really Blink-182 Dark Side was the first song I ever heard that was really like a pop punk song. And it just changed my life completely. I genuinely feel like I hit my punk phase when I turned like 19, 18, you know, and it was really kind of a crazy euphoric moment.
What is your journey as a musician been like?
Really crazy. You know, a lot of doubt from a lot of people, you know, a lot of questioning myself, you know, what am I supposed to do? Is what I'm doing good enough type of thing? And ultimately, I got to the point where I decided that I don't really care what anybody thinks, you know, and I think that's played the most important role in my music. And because that's the exact message that I think pop punk is trying to give out, you know, and it took me a minute to get there. I played around with sounds, you know, for the first year, you know, Comatose was my first single, Angels and Demons, second single, Moving Into So What. And those are all, you know, rock oriented, but very different sounds. So even to this day, I'm trying to figure out who I am. But I think that's the whole point, you know.
As you're connecting with your fans, what do they say draws them to your music?
I don't think that I could tell you. Maybe I'm just not looking hard enough. I know that they tell me. My fans are genuinely so great. I haven't met people that are so loyal to me. Even at the concerts, I had a couple headline shows on MGK's last tour, and the fans were unbelievably like loyal already, and it was such a new experience, so I was really blown away by that. I think that the honesty I give in my music, and also I really don't make music to like, you know, acquire fame, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I make music because I think it's going to help people. I make music because I genuinely want to save the world with it, because music saved my life, you know? And so I think that translates.
But what do you mean it saved your life?
So I had never been to a concert in my entire life. And I went to a Juice WRLD concert when I was 18 in Dallas, Texas. And I remember there's a moment in the concert where there's like 10,000 people singing one of his songs called Empty. And there's a line, and it says, "I'm empty. I feel so GD empty." It's like I heard 10,000 people say it at once. And I like looked at Juice WRLD, and it felt like he was making the music for me, you know. And I told myself, if he can do that for me, then I have to do this for someone else, you know. So it really was a kind of a personal internal moment that was life changing for me.
I'm curious what it means to you to be part of this pop punk resurgence when the genre has meant so much for you personally.
It's a great honor. First, you know, it's really important to acknowledge, you know, the respect and honor that comes with all this stuff. I think that's what keeps legacies moving forward. So everyone that came before me, you know, paying respects and being grateful for kind of the path they've laid, especially people really recent to me, like MGK, who really, this last album gave me such a pathway with my music, and him putting me on tour. You really just got to be respectful, you know, and always remember that. But it feels like I'm changing the world, if that makes sense, but not tangibly. Like I don't wake up thinking that I'm doing something great. It just feels like slowly but surely, you know, one drop at a time, that the world's changing. And I think that's all I can ask for. And it's really, really exciting. And sometimes it feels like bigger drops, you know, it feels like bigger things are happening, but it's all a slow, steady pace. And that's what I'm in it for.
Is it also maybe a little scary, though?
Absolutely. Yeah. Only because, you know, you dedicate your life to something. Failure hurts, you know, and like you feel things, and you also get jaded and confused. And I'm sure there's going to be a point in my career where people are like, "He's crazy," you know, and that all comes with it. And you see it ahead of time and you're like, "I'm okay with that." But when you get to it, it's all different. So it definitely could be scary. But I think if I surround myself with the right people, which I have so far, and I continue to just be authentic, I think it'll pay off in the end.
Where do you think you want to take this sound?
I remember something Travis told me, and I've been very kind of asking that same question, you know, because it is a question that runs through my mind almost daily, because this is my life. And I look at what I've done so far, so like so quickly, and I look at what I want to do. And Travis told me one time, you know, Blink had the option to be a really, really good punk band or be the biggest punk band in the world. And they decided to be the biggest punk band in the world and do weird things like play with Beyonce, you know what I mean, and go mainstream with it. And so I think that my music will speak for itself. I think that I could do everything I want in my power to make something great, and it still won't. But I think that when something is great, it just will. So I think when I continue to create, those songs are going to live timelessly, and hopefully they'll be considered at the top, you know, by people who like them. So we'll see.
Well, I have to say, one of our producers says that she thinks, "I feel like I'm changing the world, but not tangibly," that should be a song lyric. So just planting that seed with you for somewhere down the road.
Thank you for reminding me that.
We'll make sure Sophia gets writing credit. That's Jaden. That's spelled J-X-D-N. He begins his headlining world tour this April. His debut album, Tell Me About Tomorrow, was released last summer. Jaden, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you so much. Y'all have a great day.
Now back to our guests, Erica Campbell, U.S. News Editor for NME, and Tim Marson, Culture Reporter for Mashable. So we just heard from Jaden, who got his start on TikTok. I mean, how has the internet, especially TikTok, fueled pop punk's comeback, Erica?
I mean, I think TikTok has been such a driver of how people are listening to music now. I mean, obviously, Jaden just speaking about his career and being able to get in front of his fans through TikTok, but also we mentioned Olivia Rodrigo earlier and how huge Driver's License was on TikTok. I think the internet in general has always lended itself to people who felt isolated and like they couldn't resonate with the people that were physically around them. So being able to find people and artists who have the same experience as you or whose music speaks to you. The internet's always kind of been that common ground to do that. And TikTok has definitely played into that for this resurgence.
We're talking to Erica Campbell, U.S. News Editor for NME, and Tim Marson, Culture Reporter for Mashable. I'm Jen White. You're listening to 1A. We got a tweet from Matthew who says, I feel like the context of the times helps to explain pop punk a bit. Early 2000s, we have the rise of climate change, a war on terror in Iraq, and a transition into the digital age. Juxtapose that against today, there seems to be a bunch of parallels. Tim, what do you think? Is the pandemic playing a role in the surge of popularity of pop punk?
Yeah, you know, I wrote about this a little, and I think there's this kind of instinct to tie everything to the pandemic. But I think in this case, it really applies. And I think, you know, of course, the last few years have been, you know, caused a lot of anger and angst, which are the emotions that feed into pop punk very well. But I think you also look at the generation that's coming up now, like Jaden, you know, there's this young people, they have this kind of sense of doomerism in some ways, you know, it's this kind of thing online where there's a lot of bad things that they're dealing with, you know, whether it's the climate, the pandemic, the political atmosphere, you know, like the world's burning for them. And I think pop punk would really, it really feeds off of those sorts of emotions.
Erica, your thoughts?
I totally agree with Tim. I mean, even kind of going back to Avril's album and those, there's a lyric or a song called Kiss Me Just Like the World Is Ending. There's this feeling that things are falling apart and we don't have control over them that really kind of ties into the themes or the feeling of pop punk in general. But I also think we all are looking for a way to find relief and to celebrate and to have like this cathartic feeling of joy. And pop punk kind of lends itself to both that feeling of the world ending and that feeling of like being able to enjoy yourself because it does have that melodic pop underlying sound.
Well, we're hearing from lots of you this hour. Yems tweeted, pop punk is all about celebrating that self-deprecating angst that kindles in our teenage years but still burns inside of us as adults. Gary emailed, ska is an important genre to consider in tracing the roots of pop punk back through the early aughts. Bands like Real Big Fish, Less Than Jake, the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, and most importantly, Goldfinger really helped pave the path for pop punk to become mainstream. And Wendy emailed, last year I pushed past my fears of huge crowds in the time of COVID to attend my first ever stadium tour, the Hella Mega Tour. We got to see Green Day and Fall Out Boy perform, and they were sensational. We're 60, but our 24-year-old son loved the concert too. Well, I want to make sure to note that the pop punk revival isn't just happening in the U.S. It's happening overseas too. That's the Korean group Tomorrow by Together. What's the appeal of this genre to K-pop, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very much the appeal for anyone. You know, Erica said pop punk is for everyone. And I think, you know, one, there's an aesthetic appeal. There's the fashion. There's kind of like looking cool as you do it. And then two, I mean, I think it's kind of universal. I mean, one of the members of TXT covered Skater Boy. Like, it's for everyone once you get to know it.
Well, thinking back to the genre's original heyday in the 2000s, the most notable event was 9/11 in 2001. Erica, when you think about the genesis of pop punk, you know, what do you think about and what was happening in the world at that time and how the music was a response to that?
Yeah, one of the listeners did a really great job of conveying that as well, like climate change, 9/11, these sort of things when you start to realize that the world around you isn't really under your control and that there are issues that are kind of surrounding you. I think that that was kind of like an underlying thing that kind of allowed pop punk to have its heyday. And also just like a reaction to the music and that was coming out at the time. You know, we had a lot of pop artists like Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera that were making these songs that were very catchy, but they weren't really resonating with our experience as people that felt like we didn't belong or we weren't safe. So I think that that really did push it to the forefront then. And I think there's similar experiences globally that are pushing that desire for this type of music to the forefront now.
Well, we've got a little more time, so let's play some more music. This is Garden by Meet Me at the Altar. Again, that's Meet Me at the Altar. Tim and Erica, we have just about 30 seconds here. Really quickly, what other pop punk artists are you excited about, Tim?
I'm really excited about the band Pup. If I can get anybody into them, please do. There's an artist called Young Blood, who's one of like kind of the younger generation. And I'll defer to Erica now.
Erica?
Yeah, we mentioned Kenny Hoopla, but I will mention him again. Big fan of his music and how it goes into rock and not just pop. And also Pink Shift, another great band, and Pom Pom Squad. It's a little more punk than pop, but another great band.
That's Erica Campbell, the U.S. News editor for NME. Also with us today, Tim Marson, a culture reporter for Mashable. And a reminder, we've made a playlist of all the songs you've heard today. You can find that on our website, the1a.org, or on our Twitter, @1a. Erica, Tim, thanks so much. Today's producer was Avery J.C. Kleinman. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for all your great suggestions and feedback. We'll talk more tomorrow. This is 1A.